Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is a man I met because I am familiar with the Finch Files. We're going to be talking to Peter Finch, who is the host and producer of the Finch Files, stories from San Francisco and beyond. And as we first met, when he left, he said a little something about his son, and I knew there was something there that we could all learn from. So I asked him to come do this. And would you please, Peter, just first talk about the Finch Files and how you started to do that?
Yeah, it's called the Finch Files, Stories from San Francisco and Beyond. I was a career radio guy. Here in San Francisco, I worked for KFOG Radio for 18 years and KGO for 3 years. In 2014, I was inducted into the Bay Area Radio Hall of Fame, and 4 months later was out of work.
I did not realize that.
Yeah, the way radio is changing and the landscape, you know. I found
communication
my,
in general, news and newspapers.
Exactly, exactly. But I love telling stories on the radio. But I now with podcasting, you can do it that route. So right. I set up a little home studio, and I go out and I get interesting stories from people. And FinchFiles.net if people want to check
it out. I learned about you because you had done a beautiful series on cancer, killing it.
Which was
to benefit Carol Martone. And it was an exceptional evening of comedy storytelling.
Right.
And you might say, how can you laugh at a time like this? You can laugh at anything if something strikes you funny. But also, these were stories of survival, not just cancer survival. And it was just so wonderful to have that down. It was so nice that you did that.
Oh, it made for
what's your great let's just have your
episode. Yes,
your website.
Yeah, www.finchfiles.net.
Okay,
I'm on iTunes, Stitcher, all
and
those.
And people can also just Google Peter Finch.
Yeah, Peter Finch. Finch Files. If they just Google Peter Finch, they might get the dead actor. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. Remember him from the movie Network? We share a name. So he usually comes up first if you just Google Peter Finch.
Funny.
But if you do the Finch Files or Peter Finch, Finch Files, you'll get me.
So talk about life, and your son's name is what?
Davis. Mm-hmm. When he was
little.
Yeah.
Okay.
When he was little, he had a t-shirt that read, UC Davis.
Oh, because funny.
He's 27 years old, and he's on the autism spectrum, fairly high functioning.
Can you talk about what all that means for people who may not know? Like, when did you first realize this? After he was born?
At an early age, we were living in Boulder, Colorado. He wasn't quite three yet, I think. He was in a daycare program, and the woman who ran it had some experience in that field and suggested we have him diagnosed.
But what did she base that on?
He would rock back and forth, was not very good at eye contact, you know. And
so we kind of standard indications.
We were first-time parents, so we didn't know, you know. But we go, and they say, they said autism-like behavior, pervasive developmental disorder.
Did you know what that meant when they were spoken to you?
Well, autistic-like behavior. Ironically, my mother has a PhD in special education, so she's been in the field, and I knew a little bit about autism, and it was like, and I remember at this meeting when they said, you know, I said, well, we're diagnosing it at an early age, you know, we're right on top of it, we're going to be able to beat this thing or whatever, and they said, no, you know, there's no cure, you know, he's autistic, and that's the way it is. You know, we got on it at an early age, went great. We'll get him through high school. He'll be on his way.
Oh, wait, you just skipped a few words. You went from three to high school, and I'm just interested to know, and I have a feeling others will be also, what's the first step? I mean, what kind of behavior, you know, I want to say behavior modification, but that's kind of a silly phrase for it. What does he learn to do and how?
He, you know, he'd get these mad storms when he was little.
Oh, sure.
He'd get a little very frustrated. He also has a lot of anxieties, you know, that we had to manage. And there's an OCD, an obsessive compulsive component, too. When he was really little and I was leaving we had this thing we had to do every time where it would say, I'd say, I love you, Davis. I love you, Dad. I'm so glad you're my boy. I'm so glad you're my dad. You know, and so, and then I'd have to kiss him 27 times.
Oh, how lovely. Every parent should be doing that anyway.
Well, that's true. But if you're in a hurry to be somewhere, it's like, okay, Davis, here we go.
You know, right.
Through the years, you know, it's been a challenge at times. But it's been a blessing as well.
Tell us about that part.
He's an amazing kid in so many ways, an amazing memory. Big Giants fan. He can remember that game in 1996 where J.T. Snow hit a 3-run homer to win it for the Giants.
That is impressive.
Yeah.
Those kind of talents.
Yeah,
you see a lot.
Yeah, he loves horse racing. He remembers all the races. He is my human GPS. When we set out on a road trip, he's got the stack of Thomas Brother map books in his lap. And
oh, wow.
Just direct. Yeah, and he's got a good sense of humor, and he's just a sweet young man.
Does he live with you?
Here's the deal. We raised our kids in San Francisco. 3 years ago now, we decided to move down to Moss Beach near Half Moon Bay because the place we have there, the house has a little in-law unit, so he could be a little more independent.
Oh, nice.
Still be close by, yeah. And it's worked out wonderfully, even more so in that there's a horse ranch down there. It's a horse rescue adaptive riding center. They rescue thoroughbreds and other horses and have kids and young adults with special needs groom them and ride them. Yeah, I took my son there, and he met the executive director, a lovely woman. They really hit it off, and he's found his tribe. He just loves going to the ranch. He checks on the horses first and then with the people. She's had him writing grant proposals. He got him a $5,000 grant. So his life is really good down there. The biggest frustration right now is his sleep pattern, and I think a lot of people with autism maybe struggle with this. He'll go to bed at 8 o'clock in the morning, get up 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and that's kind of tough. But, you know, we've faced challenges.
Well, it's tough on a social life when other people are involved in your life. But
well, yeah, exactly.
But it doesn't hurt him any, really, right?
Not really, though he realizes to be a part of society, you kind of have to have at least hours that put you out there a little bit. But yeah, he's
tell me about the grant writing. Like what are his skills that he's good at that?
Well, he's a very good writer, and a lot of people with autism who are intelligent are, and then you don't see the quirkiness, you just see the writing, which is beautiful. And also when somebody...
But that means he has to listen to people and what their needs are in order to write a grant.
I suppose, yeah. And he has to familiarize himself. He knows how the ranch runs. And I think when you get a grant proposal from someone who's seeking funds to help people with autism, and the person submitting the grant proposal is on the autism spectrum.
Does he mention that?
He does.
Oh,
he
lovely.
Does, yeah.
Okay.
And, yeah, the $5,000 grant was from the Rex Foundation, which is the Grateful Dead's philanthropic organization. And, yeah, that was a big thrill for him. But then he takes it hard when they don't get the grant. So there is that, you know.
Mm-hmm. So. And what you said, you raised your kids.
Yeah.
Who else is there?
Yeah, I don't want to not mention my daughter, Julia.
Don't.
She's 24, extremely proud of her. She double majored in theater and psychology at UC Santa Cruz and is currently in Los Angeles trying to do the acting thing. Yeah, I felt bad for her when she was growing up because when you have a child with special needs, so much of the family dynamic has to revolve around them.
How did she do with that?
It was tough for her at times.
What did you say to her? I mean,
we told her, you know, I know it's tough for you, you know, and we'd try and throw her a bone and do things for her as well. I think eventually when they ended up going to different schools, that was easier on her. And now she kind of looks out for him, you know.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, we were at he's also got essential tremors, handshakes, and we were at a family wake, actually, where he had a drink and it was kind of sloshing around, and Julia got up and ran to him and helped him out and stuff like that. So, yeah, she's a delightful young woman. So, yeah, I'm proud of both my kids.
And do you think that she will always look out for him?
Boy, I hope so.
Or, I mean, that's a hard question to ask, but you know, you always want your children to do that, and if one has special needs...
It's something that a lot of special needs parents face, especially if they don't just have the one child and they're getting older, what's going to happen?
So what is it they do?
Boy, it's case by case. Sometimes if they have siblings, they do tell them, listen, when we're gone, you're going to have to be the ones to look after.
Which means finding housing and help.
Yeah, exactly. And it depends how high-functioning the person is. We have not wanted to lay that on our daughter, you know.
I just wondered what your hunch was,
Yeah, so I think...
And also, children, siblings are not equipped to take care of the specifics.
Right. Well, that's true, too. You know, I mean, ironically, her first job in L.A. when she got down there was working with kids on the autism spectrum, you know, and I think maybe the background with her brother helped proved to be a little stressful for her.
But I think, don't you think that as, you know, we're not going to be here forever, that part of what we really need to do is have somebody who's going to oversee.
Yeah.
Not take care of daily.
She's a good kid. Good kid. Yeah. 24. Yeah. They're always our kids. And I think she'll take it upon herself to kind of watch out for him. And we also, what's one really silver lining behind having a kid on the spectrum, autism spectrum, is we've really learned to value the people in our lives who see the person for what they are and realize how special they are and don't just tolerate them but kind of embrace who they are.
No, that's a big moment.
Oh my God.
A big moment.
Well, it's so the woman, the executive director of the ranch, Joelle, she's one of them. By the way, it's squarepegfoundation.org if people want to look that up. And we've got friends here in the city. I've got a good buddy who he and Davis and I get together and play cribbage. And my friend Tom just thinks Davis is the greatest. And
he does sound great.
Yeah. He does, but he can drive you crazy. And he acts weird, you know, because he's on the autism spectrum. But for somebody, Davis, I think, appreciates it when people respond to him that they really like him. So, you know, and these friends, Tom and his wife Amy, they're all about building community, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They've bought an apartment house here in San Francisco. They've got one unit. Their three adult children all live in the other units, you know, and they've got the vegetable garden out back. But so much of it is surrounding yourself with this supportive community, which is what we've done. And so it's not just Julia, but we've got a lot of people that are looking out for Davis and want to see him happy and
successful.
You know,
the things you're saying are so what life should be about for everyone anyway. That telling your children I love you before you go to work and letting them tell you that and kissing however many times you want to. But also being community and embracing people, not tolerating them. I think that goes across the board.
Yeah.
Barbara Rose Brooker just did a Love Letters Live the other day, and she's talking about that same thing having to do with age.
Yeah.
And that, you know, how old people are kind of tolerated.
Right.
You know, oh, look, good for you, you're 90 years young, or do you want a seat in the bus, or can I cut your food, or they're tolerated.
Yeah.
And that's a terrible thing to be tolerated.
I know. This society, when it's all about youth and stuff like that. But, yeah, you want to be celebrated, not tolerated.
That's right. You you think there are just better awarenesses now, surely, than there were.
Oh, in terms of autism?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah. So many people, you know, I think they've gotten, you know, and my son was kind of at the forefront of this huge wave where there's, you know, but we've seen characters.
Wait, a huge wave of what?
Of people diagnosed with autism, you know, in the past 20, 25 years, all of a sudden, you know, the number of cases has really gone up. Mm-hmm. And I think there is more awareness. You know, there have been TV shows, Parenthood was one where there was a child on the show who was on the spectrum, you know. And I think people out in public, when they see these young people acting kind of quirky, they can go, oh, they must be on the autism spectrum, you know. And I actually have, all in addition to my podcast, I have a day job working at Alcatraz Island.
Oh, now I see that Golden Gate National Parks emblazoned on your shirt.
Yeah.
What is it you do?
Yeah, I work at the cell house. We greet visitors, answer questions, set them up with their headphones to do the tour. And, I've really, you know, gotten good at spotting people on the, you know, young people that are on the spectrum. And I like to think that I deal with them really well.
Oh, I'm sure you do. You know, I'm aware also sometimes just sitting on the bus, there was a young man there who was so Tourette-ic.
Yeah.
He was so clearly, and he was behaving in that manner, and people were acting as if they were frightened of him.
Huh.
I mean, they were frightened of him.
Right.
You know, he was swatting out and saying things
right.
and repeating. And I thought that, you know, this awareness is so important. All this kid needed was a smile and a hello.
Yeah, that's true.
And
well, one nice thing about San Francisco, that
yes.
you, and having raised our city here, you know, my son, sometimes in public, he'd break into a run or he'd be stimming, you
yeah.
know, slapping his hand. But people here, you know, it's just part of the rich pageantry of
yes.
life you see in San Francisco. They, you know, they would look another, you know, they were fine with it. They weren't, you know, maybe they'd be like, oh, that's interesting. But,
right.
you know, you see a lot of different stuff here in the
you
city.
You do. Yeah. Yes. But I think in general, you know, there's Gail Ford Williamson is an agent in Los Angeles, and she represents people of varying abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of people now who are acting and doing what they want to do and can do, despite what we used to call disabilities that would put people out of the loop.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we have one guy in his 40s working at Alcatraz who's on the autism spectrum, and part of his deal is every visitor he asks him, well, how'd you like the tour? Where are you from? And wherever they're from, it can be Madrid, Spain, he can reel off like 5 restaurants
oh.
in their city and menu items. And all
and
the,
how welcoming is that?
Yeah, oh, and people get a huge kick out of it,
yes.
you know.
My goodness, that's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah, they get a lot of, you know, now when we work with them and it's kind of, you hear the same thing over and over again.
But still,
yeah.
somebody who's visiting
yeah.
from a city and is in foreign waters, and then somebody knows what's at home.
Oh, yeah.
You feel extra good. So this just is kind of a, if I may, I don't know if you agree, but this is within that broad world of the right person for the right job.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. He, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, and yeah, the visitors, they're like, oh, you've been to Madrid? And no, I've never been there. He spends a lot of time on Yelp and on the computer. But yeah, it's a good job for him, and he loves it. And for somebody like me, who's the big challenge for adults on the autism spectrum is finding a job that they can handle.
Yes, of course.
And work, and he certainly found one. You know, my son, we
it's
don't
wonderful.
Know yet. You know,
yeah.
the verdict isn't in yet, but hopefully we'll see something
yeah.
there. Yeah.
And I was going to ask you something else, and
sure.
just thinking about him. I mean, I have people in my own life who are on that spectrum. We all probably do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and Asperger's and yes, finding the right thing to do is just wonderful. Nobody needs being left out. Does he have friends?
He, you know, he has his tribe at the horse ranch,
okay,
and they'll show
yeah.
up, and it's like, hey, Davis, you know. But in terms of, you know, buddies that he can hang out with and do stuff with, no, he has my wife and I. I'm
sure,
his friend,
that's
you know.
Now, what about school when he was young?
He went to public school here in San Francisco through the 8th grade.
And what was that like? I mean, how did they...
We lucked out. He went to Clara Lilienthal, which is a K-12, one of the alternative schools. There was a lot of parental involvement. So, you know, I think maybe during his, you know, through 8th grade, there was maybe one kid who tried to bully him,
mm-hmm.
and Davis kicked him in the shins.
Oh, good.
But for the most part, you know, a lot of parental involvement, people were very kind to him.
So he didn't grow up isolated in any way.
No, he didn't. And then for high school, we found a college prep school for kids on the autism spectrum in the East Bay in
Moraga. Well, let's say this name because people might need to know this.
Sure, Orion Academy.
And what are they like?
It was good for him. It was a rough commute for 4 years. He had to get on BART every day.
Oh, he did that by himself?
Yeah, and then he could handle BART.
Which is more than I can do.
And then transferred to a county bus that took him to the school. So, you know, but it was hard, like if they had an event over there, you know, he couldn't really go back all that often. But, you know, obviously they totally got what he was about. So I think it was a good school for him.
Sounds like it. What about after high school?
He went to College of Marin, got an AA degree. He's a big political wonk. He loves political science, and he knows all the members of the Senate and all this stuff.
Again, which is more than I know.
I know, right? So he went to College of Marin. It took him about 5 years, but he got an AA degree. He was set to transfer to San Francisco State, And his hardest class at college, we're in like a four-unit math class, didn't transfer over, and so he was half a unit short.
Oh.
You know, and a lot of neurotypical kids, they'd be like, I'll take a weight training class, pick up the unit. But he was like, no, they've insulted me. I'm done with college.
I don't blame him.
Yeah, well.
I mean, that is so protocol over common sense.
Yeah.
Which you find everywhere, and I find it infuriating whenever I see it.
Well, that was rough, but he explained himself well to my wife and I, saying, well, okay, I'm not going to pursue college more now. Fortunately, he did get the AA degree. But now, so he's done with that, and the time he goes to this horse ranch two or three times a week, and it's almost like an internship, you know. But the biggest challenge is not, it's easy for these young people to get stuck in a rut where they'll play video games or watch TV and just not, because there's a lot of apprehension, they don't always
easy
put
for all kids
out there.
And adults to get stuck in that rut.
That's true, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this everything you're saying about him is, I understand that this is a special instance,
right?
But it's not so different than what's true across the board for everyone.
One of his first school principal, you know, we were talking once about Davis's special needs, and when she paused at one point and said, "But really, when you think about it, every kid here has special needs."
Of course.
Right?
Let me ask you about love letters, because I'm dying to get into this. Now, obviously, he's smart. He writes grants. He reads. He comprehends a lot, and more than most. Let me just say it this way. If you had to write a love letter right now, who would it be to? Because I can think of three of them right off the top of my head.
Right. I guess I'd go with Davis, since we've been talking about him. You know, though when he was little, I'd say it, but I'd say it again. I love you, Davis. I'm so glad I'm your dad.
Yes, and I like the way you say that. I told him a lot.
Yeah.
But what happens, I mean, I look at this, and I'm very committed to this. What happens when we're not here? You can't exactly reread a memory.
Yeah.
Memory can fail. Memory isn't exact. A letter you can bring out and reread and reread. What would you say to him? See, I'm thinking a series of them, like four of them.
Well, a lot of what we've talked about here. You know, Davis, I know life isn't always easy for you, and you can get frustrated.
How happy I am to see every strength you have, and then just list them?
Yeah, absolutely.
So he knows that.
And I do that verbally a lot.
I understand that you do.
So that it's written down. I'm glad we're talking
here. Indelible ink on good paper, because I will tell you that whatever you say on a disc or on a CD or however you record yourself, technology changes, as you know.
Yeah.
And you won't be able to access those in 20 years.
Yeah.
Letters are still, in my opinion, the best information storage for what's in your heart.
Talking to you here, I'm realizing I have a lot of love letters to write, because Davis, for being Davis, my wife, for being an awesome mother to, you know, my daughter, for being a great sister to him, Joelle at the ranch, for being his Mother Teresa of the equine world, you know.
And isn't that a love letter in its own?
Yeah. And my friend Tom and what he's done for Davis.
And, you know, they don't have to be long. Some can be short, I understand. And, you know,
do you find if people get these love letters that they're a little embarrassed by them?
Oh, or such a good question. Oh, I just love this. You're so smart. Okay.
Well, because it's like, oh, yeah, of course I'm that way with Dave. You know what? You know.
Right. Sometimes. And that's one of the things you have to consider in writing a love letter. They're emotional. And you have to consider, how much is the recipient going to be able to take in without squirming?
Yeah.
That's why sometimes 10 shorter letters are great. But if a person does squirm a little bit, he can do it in private.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes people have been a little squirmy about the love letter, and then in 3 months it has settled into their hearts and heads.
Yeah.
And they realize this is just what they need to hear. And they're not squirming at all.
Really? Is it ever where a person gets a love letter and they have this great relationship, but, you know, now it's taking it to another... It does take it to another level when they get this letter, right?
And it can.
Yeah.
Usually it's good.
Yeah, it is good. But
does
it ever get awkward?
Well, it doesn't in any life I've seen.
Okay.
One instance of a woman who wrote a love letter to a man she'd been in love with since high school. And once in a while, it's awkward for a minute, and then there's a double take.
Okay.
But whatever it is, you know, once we're gone and our children and our have these things in our handwriting,
yeah,
they get to hold something that has felt the touch of your hand. I cannot tell you how this brings back parents and grandparents.
Yeah.
It is so strong, the look of somebody's handwriting. Yes. And anyway, you know, you partly do it for your own joy.
Right.
Of bathing in the positive.
Well, here's the other challenge, and it's, I mentioned Davis has a little tremor. It's a genetic thing. It's called essential tremor. My mother has it. I have it. So, you know, my mother especially, and she's in her 80s now, her handwriting is really spidery.
Uh-huh.
And even for me to write a letter, to physically write it, I have to use one hand to kind of guide the other hand.
Then in that case, when there's a physical reason that you really can't do it, you know, you're off the hook. Do it on your word processor.
Right.
But write a little P.S.
Yeah.
Sign it in your own handwriting.
Well, and what I was...
And date it.
Okay, dated. That's good.
So
well, what
some,
I was...
Because
gonna,
I might
yeah,
say,
go ahead.
If you don't, where's the proof that you were there?
Yeah, yeah.
That you were behind this expression of love.
Well, and the one thing I was going to say, too, is if you actually do write the physical letter, despite having a tremor, it means that much more. It's
yes.
like, wow, it must have taken them an hour to
that
write
that was
this
my
letter.
Next point.
Oh, okay,
yes.
Sorry.
No, I'm glad you said it. I love when other people say these things because whatever your handwriting flaw is or difficulty, I mean, if it's really physically painful or then you shouldn't put yourself through that, but you can put something on there. And even the fact, some people who really can't, I mean, there's been a paralysis or something severe.
Right.
You know, they can scritch out a little XXOO. They can
yeah.
do something.
Oh, yeah.
They can, so that somebody knows, yes, that you took the effort.
That's true.
Right. And the, as far as the spidery handwriting, a lot of older people, it gets spidery. And it's so valuable.
Yeah.
It is really kind of the thumbprint of your heart.
Sure.
You know, everybody has lucid or bright. Nobody has your handwriting, no matter how rickety or spidery it is.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so a series of letters.
There you go.
Oh, gosh, wouldn't that be wonderful for you?
So,
and they will last forever. And by the way, grandchildren, or let just strangers find them someday, they'll know something about your family important. You started to ask something. I'm sorry.
No. I was just... So the series of letters could be fun. Do you tip off at the end of the first
letter? Oh, again. Wonderful. Yes,
come?
I do.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I've got more to say, but this may be enough for now.
Oh, okay.
So stay tuned.
Gotcha.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I do that, and I advise that.
Cool.
And even if you don't, you know, maybe in a year you're going to have something else to laud him for.
Yeah.
Okay, here it is in a nutshell. If you have something positive and loving to say to a person, shouldn't you write it down and stamp it and mail it? Because gratitude taken to the grave serves nobody.
Right. That's true.
And he should have that until he's 80. He should be able to take out those letters and say to himself, look how much my father loved me. He really knew who I was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Thank you for doing this with me. I'm so happy we have this little chat.
This is a lot of fun. It's a great way to start the day.
I'm
kind
glad.
Of doing this earlier in the
Thank
day.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And make copies, by the way. We live in a wonderful world.
Yeah.
I don't do it myself. I'm yapping to tell others, and I always forget to do it myself. But make copies of what you sent.
Okay.
First of all, it'll prevent you from repeating yourself, unless you want to.
Right.
And you'll have the joy of reading what you felt.
Yeah,
when you're 90.
That's true.
Okay.
Right.
We're going to look towards being 90. Thank you, dear, for doing this with me. So until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye after I remind you that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion, but your days are filled with moments that warrant love letters. Bye.
Hello.